So this week we saw reaction from both the meat and dairy industries towards the Ministry of Education's newly launched climate change curriculum. Beef and Lamb New Zealand took exception to the whole teaching resource that is placed in front of all our kids up to year 10 because it recommended that we teach the children to reduce their beef and dairy intake. And what's so terribly wrong about it? And our Federated Farmers have since, like on Friday, launched a petition against it. They can't believe that, you know, the bedrock of our economy, it's now being taught in schools not to support it. The curriculum is just one more voice in the growing threat against the sector, they say, with plant-based diets proving more and more popular, and now schools are going to be teaching this, aren't they? So what would, though, we started thinking to ourselves, what would a reduction or removal of meat and a growing plant-based society mean for New Zealand's economy? And so future food specialist Dr. Rosie Bosworth is with me right now. Hello, Rosie. Thank you for giving up time on your Sunday.
Hey, not a problem at all.
What did you think when you heard that this was going to be in the curriculum?
Look, I wasn't surprised. We've had a number of these sort of backlashes against the meat and dairy industry happen already. The Ministry of Health suggesting that meat and dairy be removed from the menus too last year. So it's just the beginning of a tsunami of what's to come, I see, for the future. Something we need to be prepared for rather than pushing back against.
Wow, okay. So I was about to ask you, but I think you've already answered my question. Is the meat and dairy industry overreacting here? You know, with Fed Farmers launching a petition and they're going to be quite vocal against this being part of the curriculum?
Look, it depends what part of the industry you're playing in. If you're talking about commodity dairy, 78% of, say, for example, Fonterra's export earnings are commodity, then you are, of course, going to be worried about that. You can't get much premium prices from any of your ingredients that go into packet soup mix or Panadol pills and all sorts. But if you're in the high-value beef and lamb sector, sure. But let's have a look at the numbers in beef and lamb right now. Beef and lamb, most of the exports offshore sell are processing cuts, not high-value cuts, and they sell for 5 to 10 times more cheaply than your high-value meat. So it really depends where the industries are going to be playing. Are they going to be moving up the value chain? And, I just sound like a crack record every time I say, are they going to be moving up the value chain? Because we just haven't seen it. In fact, Fonterra last year actually moved down the value chain as refocusing back on ingredients after their massive loss last year of, over $600 million. So we are a little bit in trouble if we don't look ahead. There are certainly opportunities. We need to really grasp what that means for us, though, and certainly not be, harping on about the typewriter when there's this imminent onslaught of, the computer of meat about to hit the market.
So let's just say this is not absolutism. Our kids are not going to be taught that they should not eat meat. They will be taught that if they ate less meat, then it would be good for the environment. Would that be fair to say?
Oh, of course, absolutely. Yeah.
And therefore, we are never going to lose a meat and dairy industry because meat and dairy will always be consumed by humans because, well, frankly, we really like it.
There will always be, well, I'm not an advocate for saying always, never say never, but there will be a market for some time for very, very premium, high-value red meat.
Yeah.
So that's not an issue right now. There is a wealthy market ready to take on board our pastorally raised red meat. However, we have a couple of other things converging together that threaten that over the long term, and that is a growing consumer base of Gen Zs and millennials who really don't see the value in eating meat or animal products anymore as these new products come to market that are appealing to their experiential needs without the environmental cost and the health impact of those.
But they still may eat these plant-based foods, and then perhaps on Friday night they might decide to go for a $1,000 piece of Wagyu beef from Tony Astle, the restaurant.
Yeah, I mean, yes, that's certainly an option for the next, say, 10 years. Right. But once this generation comes through and once these costs become so much higher, once regular agricultural costs are so much higher, then these arguments to eat a bit of living animal that's so inefficient to produce are going to become less and less compelling. Mm. And as soon as the Gen Zs are the major consumer group, then we really aren't going to have a huge leg to stand on. And I just want to make the point here that it's not so much just about consumers, and it's not just so much about red meat and it's the devil or anything. I'm not suggesting that at all. What's happening now with fermentation and cell-cultured foods and plant-based proteins, so not only just plant-based proteins, but new technologies that's enabling us to produce these same proteins outside of the animal. These are forecasts, and they're already on track for exponential decline in costs. And for the dairy industry, in 5 years' time, the cost of synthetic dairy proteins is forecast to be the cost of New Zealand.
All right, so knowing this is coming, and knowing that you can actually transition from one product to another within a generation of the animal, if you know what I mean, the industry is going to continue having business going forward, but slowly it could actually redeploy its land towards producing the base product for any plant-based product. So what you're arguing or what you're saying here is let's not completely freak out, but realise that we're in a process of change and evolution.
Yes. And look, farmers are incredibly entrepreneurial. We've seen the shift before when the wool industry collapsed. We shifted, and we shifted really successfully.
Could a plant-based food industry, in terms of the New Zealand economy, be as lucrative as our current meat and dairy industry?
Look, I don't know it could be, because plants, if you're going to be a crop supplier for plants, it's going to be a commodity play as well. So you're swapping one commodity for another. Where there is value is where we start to become the scientists and food technologists behind these new foods, and selling more of the IP and around fermentation, around extrusion technologies for these new plant proteins or our cell-based proteins, and actually starting to transition farmers to more of a technologically led future where they are fermentation specialists or food production specialists. So I don't know if we're going to make a killing selling peas in the Highlands. You know, I just don't think that's going to work.
Yeah, okay, I get that. Now, by the way, are we actually just swapping one threat for another? Which I often feel about some of these initiatives, you know, and that's, for instance, electric vehicles. You know, you're swapping the emissions with the disposal of the battery and all the emissions that come to create a car in the first place. But is it possible that we'll get rid of the methane-emitting cattle and ruminants, and replace that with a whole heap of nitrogen and fertilizer pollution as we support a plant-based crop?
I mean, that could certainly happen. The only upside of supporting a plant-based crop, irrespective of the, say, monoculture, the adverse effects of monocultures have, and that kind of challenge, is that even when we are growing all these crops at scale, even at massive scale, they will still be less environmentally impactful than the current industrialised animal agricultural system. So I like to make the example of almond milk and milk. People are, you know, are really hating on almond milk because it's water intensive, but it's still a fraction as water intensive as dairy milk. People don't quite realise that. It may be more intensive than soy milk or oat, but it's still the lesser of two evils when we're comparing the cow with the almond. So, and we'll see that again with plant-based proteins. But let's not think that plant-based proteins are going to rule the world. They won't. They will be a stepping stone until synthetic biology and fermentation technologies can produce animal proteins as we see them at the molecular level, or DNA level, in fermentation facilities. And that can scale at a fraction of the environmental cost, about 70 to 80%. More environmentally friendly from everywhere on the spectrum, from water to land use to growing crops and emissions. So that's where the big game changer will happen, but that'll take a little bit longer than the plant-based protein revolution will.
Wow, fascinating. So do you feel we should be excited?
As a youngster, I'm not alone. unfortunately, I'm no longer a youngster, but as a youngster, I would be. I would be getting into STEM subjects, science, technology, engineering, maths. I'd be getting into biotech. I would be getting into anything related to fermentation or scaling new food technologies. And we would be away, you know, laughing if that's where we started to focus our energy on that younger generation.
All right, Dr. Rosie Bosworth, thank you once again. Very, very interesting talk. And again, thank you for giving up your Sunday.
No worries. A total pleasure. Thank you.